Everyone, I am chair of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, Representative Donna Nelson, and I hereby open this meeting of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Today is Thursday, January the 13th, and on the agenda is an organizational meeting. The first item of business is adoption of committee rules. Mr. Administrator, can you tell us about these proposed rules?
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe that each of the members has a copy of the rules. I have additional copies here if people would like to look at them. I can go over them briefly since we have several new members here. First of all, the committee will operate in accordance with the Oregon Constitution, House rules, and Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure and any applicable statutory provisions. Committee rules may be amended by affirmative vote of the majority of the committee, but at least one day's notice shall be given in writing to each committee member. Number two says a quorum shall be comprised of a majority of the members. For this committee, that would be four. In the absence of a quorum, the chair may assign fewer members to receive public testimony. A quorum for such hearings shall be one member. Rule number three says the chair shall call committee meetings, set agendas, and cause notice of the time and place of the committee meetings. Numbers four and five have to do with subcommittees. The only thing I'd point out there is that the speaker is the one who designates subcommittees. On number six, notice of any full committee or subcommittee meeting shall specify whether the committee or subcommittee will conduct a hearing, work session, or both. Testimony shall be taken at a hearing, but is not necessary to be taken at a work session. Number seven, all committee and subcommittee meetings shall be open to the public and to the press. Number eight, the chair may set a time limit on public testimony. Number nine, this again is subcommittee information. Any member of the full committee may attend and participate in any hearing or work session of a subcommittee. If we do have subcommittees, then we can talk about those. We can maybe go over those rules again. Number 10 is in regard to committee action. Affirmative vote of a majority of the appointed members is required to, and they're listed there, six items: to cause a measure to be introduced by the committee, to table a measure, to remove a measure from the table, to amend a measure, to send a measure to the floor of the House, or to approve recommendations. On the second page, you'll see rule number 11 says a motion in committee does not require a second. Number 12 says upon the request of any two members, a roll call vote shall be taken and recorded on any question. Number 13 has to do with minority reports, and I probably should read that now. The notice of intent to file a minority report may only be applied to a measure reported out of committee. The minority report shall be subscribed to by at least two committee members. The two committee members need to have been present and voted in opposition to the committee report. They shall notify the chair or committee staff by 5 p.m. of the session day on which final action on the measure was taken, or before adjournment of the committee meeting, during which such final action was taken, if the adjournment of that committee meeting is later than 5 p.m. Any members giving such notice shall have 48 hours after giving notice, or until 5 p.m. of the second following session day, whichever is earlier, to deliver the minority report, including a legislative council draft, to committee staff. Minority reports shall be filed at the desk on the same day the committee report is filed. No member shall sign on more than one minority report on the same measure. Rule number 14 says proposed amendments other than by members of the Legislative Assembly must be submitted in writing to committee staff at least 48 hours prior to the work session at which they are to be considered. And rules number 14 and 15 really address the fact that we want to be sure that any amendments are done by legislative council. So rule number 15 is the last one. It says the committee shall not report a measure to the floor of the House unless the written legislative council amendments are accompanying the report have been approved by a majority of the members of the committee at a meeting called for that purpose. In addition, the committee shall review any fiscal or revenue impact statement issued in compliance with House Rule 8.20. Any correction of clerical errors on amendments need not be approved by a majority of members but shall be signed for by the committee chair. The corrected amendments must bear the written caption corrected.
Thank you very much, Mr. Administrator. Is there discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I note only one thing that that I wonder about a little bit. Under item one, on amendments, it requires one-day notice given in writing to each committee member. I wonder if this is in addition to or the requirement of 2 days' notice of agendas for the committee, or if this is intended to cover some other thing. And that's probably a question to Jim.
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe that the 48-hour posting requirements would still apply. So, in effect, Representative Barnhart is correct. It would be 48 hours notice that you would need to give for a change in rules, because to change the rules would require a specific agenda item to be posted.
Well, and then a follow-up, if I may. I'm wondering, maybe this item isn't intended to mean that the text of the amendment needs to be given to members of the committee a day before. So that would be a different rule than the requirement that a notice be given. I know it says notice here, but maybe that's the intent. Do you know?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think what we can do is check with the Chief Parliamentarian of the House to get clarification on that and bring that back to you at the next meeting.
I don't anticipate it being a problem.
Thank you.
Being a nitpicker in the parliamentary rules, sometimes I ask questions that probably will never come up.
And Madam Chair, if you don't mind my saying, these are the same rules that every committee is looking at. They're kind of standardized rules. So I think it's a good question and what we'll follow up on.
Thank you very much. I guess my question, Mr. Administrator, is will we be able to conduct business today without these rules being approved?
What I would recommend, Madam Chair, is that you go ahead and approve these rules, and then we'll get clarification on that particular item.
Thank you very much. Is there any other discussion? No other discussion? Well, I happen to have one item. If I could bring this to everyone's attention, Rule 2 that talks about the quorum for us to hear testimony. And I just want to mention that I find it very offensive to think that we would have only one member here when the public will have traveled miles, spent their time and resources on a subject that is very, very important to them. So while we leave this rule as it is, I just really want to request that we have all members present as much as possible. This is a new committee. We're truly honored that the speaker this year ordained us to establish this committee. We've been fighting for it for many, many years, and so I'm just going to hope that without having to make a rule, that all of us will make just a tremendous effort to be here at all times, and certainly we want to show our respect to the public who come to testify. And I might just ask if I could get a voice of a consent to that suggestion.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Could we have a motion to accept the rules then?
Madam Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
I so move.
Representative Barnhart has moved to approve the rules as written. Is there any other discussion? If there is no discussion, are there any objections to this motion? Hearing and seeing none, the motion passes and the committee rules are adopted. And thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Committee members and members in our audience today, I would like to introduce Holly Robinson, and she is the responsible individual who will be drafting our rules for this committee, and that's a lot of work, and we want to tell you we appreciate you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to come down and introduce myself, in part because you have so many new members here. I'm Holly Robinson. I work for the Office of Legislative Counsel. I draft I draft most of the veterans and stuff, as well as the military benefits, as well as other topics such as health care. our insurance and lots of other things. But because this committee is new, I thought it would be helpful to just come down and answer any questions that you might have and put a face to a name, or at least a face to the initials that will be at the corner of your drafts and amendments. When you see HR, you'll know it's me.
And it's not human resources.
It's not human resources.
However, it's a great human resource.
And it's not help right now.
That's right. And we're most appreciative. Any questions of Mr. Robinson? Thank you very much, and we appreciate your efforts on our behalf and of our veterans. Okay. If there is no other discussion, now we will vote by roll call.
No,
do we need to do that?
No.
We don't need to go back there? Okay. We'll cancel that bureaucratic action.
Well, you have the option in any of these decisions as to whether you want to do roll call or without objection, and you did without objection, so
okay.
The rules have been adopted. So.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next, I'd like to ask each of the members of our committee to introduce himself or herself, and if you wish, say a little bit about what you'd like to see accomplished by our House Committee on Veterans Affairs. And we'll start with Representative Kahn.
Well, good morning to the committee and all of our people in the audience. My name is Representative Betty Comp, and I'm from House District 22. In House District 22, the geographic cities are Woodburn, Jervis, and unincorporated Brooks in North Salem. And I just want to share with you that it's an honor and privilege to be here. I'm a freshman legislator, and particularly for veterans, the only thing that I would say briefly is I've known many people in my life that are veterans, and I spent many, many months up at the Veterans Hospital with my father-in-law and the services that he received for health care. And that's one of my goals, is that no matter whether you are a veteran of World War II or, gosh, I know there's people from other wars here, from the Korean War, that are still, that we want to support in Oregon, particularly with health care, and as our troops come home, particularly to help them transition and make sure that they have good educational opportunities for new training if they so desire.
Thank you very much, Representative Kahn. Representative Boquist.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm Representative Brian Boquist. I represent the 23rd House District, which is rural portions of Yamhill, Polk, Benton, Lynn, and Marion County, and I got a couple of four strange voters, but they voted for me, so I keep them. I'm like my legislative aide, Rachel Crawford, who is assisting within this committee. I'm a combat veteran. I served in Iraq and had the pleasure, distinct unpleasure, of serving in seven other declared or undeclared conflicts in the United States government, as did Rachel serve, just returned from a year in Afghanistan. And so both of us, as Army Reserve officers and NCOs and former National Guard officers and NCOs, are very keen on ensuring that we take care of our citizen soldiers and our returning federal soldiers who are now coming back to the state in terms of their service to their country and what we can do to bring them back into the community and assist them as necessary to help out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative and Vice Chair Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to serve on this committee. One of the issues that I represent House District 11, which includes parts of Eugene, Creswell, Pleasant Hill, Sotaville, Brownsville, Coburg, and the areas in between. I have Springfield mostly surrounded, but very little of Springfield is actually in my district. And so it's a very interesting district, which includes urban folk and university workers and education workers in Eugene, to very rural folk living out as far as Leeburg, and farming and tree lot owners and things of that sort. So it's a very diverse district. In my district, lots of many, many people are interested and concerned about the issue of how we deal with our veterans as they return from the conflicts that we're now involved in, but also, of course, veterans of earlier wars and conflicts. I'm very interested in making sure that we do everything we can to honor our veterans, that to make sure that our veterans have the educational opportunities, that we deal with housing issues and healthcare issues that we need to deal with for them. and also that we have done a good job of making sure that our National Guardsmen who have been activated for these conflicts also get the help and the support that they need in order to be successful citizens upon their return and after their return. I'll just note for part of my interest comes from the fact that my father is a World War II veteran who, among other things, landed on the beach at D-Day in France. And although he's had an extremely successful life, he's done very well, raised three children, had very responsible employment, there's always that little piece of him, which I think is common with many combat veterans, that is private and kind of separate. And we need to acknowledge that our combat veterans have been through very difficult times in their role as defending America, and recognize that they have some special needs. I see our committee's job is to survey the laws and the circumstances that they find themselves in, and to do the best job we can to see that that they're fully integrated back into the community, and that they have the resources that they need in order to do that. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Representative. And now down this side, Representative Scott Bruin.
Sorry, on this end. Okay. Well, thank you very much. My name is Scott Bruin. I'm a representative from District 37, which is all of Tualatin and all of West Lynn, the Stafford area, South Lake Oswego, North Wilsonville. I'll give you a feel for where that is. And before I say anything, let me say, Madam Chair, what an honor it is to serve with you and my fellow colleagues on this committee, especially for a freshman. What an important committee to be put on right out of the gate. So I'm honored to do that. I think we could say that that this is a I think it'd be hard to say actually that this is a committee whose time has come, because honestly this the time for this committee has never gone away. But with current events as they are, world events, with the ongoing war against terrorism, it's never been more important than it is now. I come from like most Americans, Madam Chair, I come from a long line of veterans. One of my great grandfathers was a doughboy in France in World War I. Both of my grandfathers served in the Pacific in World War II, and my career aspirations were to serve as a military officer in the Coast Guard, but because of some chronic illnesses, I'm serving in the State House. to echo what's been said already, I think that our job is to help ease the sacrifice of veterans and veterans' families. Obviously, we all know that serving in uniform is a sacrifice, and sadly, sometimes the ultimate sacrifice. I feel that our obligation is to help ease that with the families through quality of life and through the benefits and the programs that need to be done. So I look forward to serving with you and the rest of this body, and with honor.
Great. Thank you, Representative. Representative Dave Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dave Hunt from Clackamas County, actually just across the river from Scott. Mostly unincorporated Clackamas County, Gladstone, Oak Grove, Jennings Lodge, Clackamas area. Also, it's really interesting if you look at the issues that we as a legislature dominantly are charged to focus on, issues around jobs, issues around education, issues around health care. All three of those just intersect with the needs of veterans, returning National Guard members, and their families in such a critical way. And it's just really every aspect of education, every aspect of health care, physical and mental, every aspect of jobs and employment and income security for those folks and their families. So it seems like it's going to be a great place to find a lot of bipartisan agreement and common ground, which may elude some other committees this session. But I'm looking forward to that and looking forward to serving with all of you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Representative and Vice Chair Debbie Farr.
Well, I'm Representative Debbie Farr, and like Representative Barnhart, my district includes part of Eugene, Northwest Eugene, Bethel, Dynevo, Santa Clara, unincorporated and incorporated in the city. And then it goes on to Junction City and Cheshire. And then actually my district even extends to the shores of Fern Ridge Lake, including a very small town called Alvador. And I'm very proud to have been chosen to serve on this committee. My father is a World War II vet. He served in Okinawa and in Korea. My husband, former Representative Pat Farr, was a member of the Oregon National Guard, the 2 of the 162, which is one of the units that has been deployed to Iraq. And because of my father's service, I feel very strongly that there are a number of vets in his age group that are not served very well by our state. And I believe that we need to concentrate on providing health care for those vets, the elderly especially. And in meeting with Donna, I learned recently that there's a very high percentage of vets that are either unemployed, hungry, or homeless, and that's unconscionable. Another thing I think that we really need to focus on is the transition of returning soldiers in aiding them and their families. And I've also learned recently that many times it takes up to 18 months before these soldiers will see signs of stress related to combat. So that's something that I think we need to be very aware of. I am proud and honored to serve on this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And I think you'll agree that we have a very dedicated and committed committee. I, too, feel so honored, and I'm so proud for us to have this opportunity. In my past two terms, I have longed to be a voice for our veterans and our active military servicemen and women. And now, the time is now, as we should say, and I just feel so pleased. We do owe great debt to you veterans. We know that freedom isn't and wasn't free. And thanks to you, we're sitting here today, free to speak. And we are so grateful. We are grateful for those who are active now in this war against terrorism. We're also grateful for their families who also sacrifice so that freedom can prevail. With resolve, this committee has determined to go to all points of the state. We will make ourselves available for meetings in all corners of the state, in every district, in every city, in every county, with the support of all of our representatives and our state senators. We feel very strongly that we want to let every voice be heard. And with that thought in mind, we promise to be very respectful of those who come to testify. We want to hear from you first, and then we will address the bills that are not a part of their relaying concerns that those individuals may have. So today I just say, God bless America, God bless our veterans, our military families, and also those who are serving in this capacity in our state and federal government to assist. And at this time, I would just like to ask those who are veterans, and particularly Rachel, who has been mentioned by Representative Boquist, who just recently served our country, as did he, would you stand, and we'd like to just recognize you, please. All our veterans and servicemen.
Yeah. Thank you.
And thank you very much. At this time, I'd also like to say that a committee is never, never successful without an outstanding committee staff. And we are so blessed to have as our Chief Administrator Jim Stembridge and Aaron Seeler, who will be assisting us. And, I mean, we have really got the best of the best. And Administrator Stembridge, would you like to say something?
Well, on behalf of Aaron, I think we're both very happy to be your staff. Look forward to a productive session.
Thank you. Aaron?
I have to agree with Jim. I have to say, actually, I've made my grandfather very proud. He is a veteran of World War II, and he would tell me stories growing up, and he'd be very proud that I'd be working on a committee such as this. So I honor him today to be here. So thank you.
Look, thank
and
you.
Aaron, I hope your testimony shows up on the tape. So
we'll see if she really knows how to operate all four of those machines at one time.
write it.
Okay. At this time, we would like to invite members in the audience who would like to make a statement or address the committee. And we'd like to begin with the Honorable Director of our Department of Veterans Affairs, Jim Willis.
Good morning, Chair Nelson, members of the committee, Administrator Stembridge, committee staff. What an honor it is to sit before you this morning for a committee that is designed specifically for issues dealing with our veterans. Give you a very brief little bio here on why I'm sitting here. I'm a native Oregonian. My grandfather was in World War I. My father was a combat veteran of World War II and survivor of the Battle of the Bulge, and I am a Vietnam War veteran. I spent 30 years, over 30 years, as a professional law enforcement officer and completed my career with the Oregon State Police last August as a major. I had been a volunteer veterans advocate for well over 20 years, primarily at the direction of my father, whose advice to me as a veteran of World War II when I returned from Vietnam was this: we who returned with our health have a duty to the families of those whose relatives did not return, and we have a duty to those veterans who were damaged spiritually, emotionally, or physically. And my father stopped, and you have to understand he was a lawyer, so he was very good at getting my attention. And he stopped and then looked at me and he said, "Son, that is a duty that lasts a lifetime for surviving veterans." So what an honor it was then when my fellow veterans came to me last year and said, "You need to look at this position that's opening at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs." And at that time, I was serving as chair of the Governor's Advisory Committee to the Department on Veterans Affairs and had been appointed by Governor Kitzhaber. So I sought the position and was honored when Governor Kulongowski made the appointment and the advisory committee concurred, which is what's required under law. And then, of course, I got to go visit with the Senate, and they concurred. So that leaves me here today. So I took my position effective, or was appointed September 1st, and then was confirmed the following November. So I think when anyone receives a responsibility, one of the first things they want to do is scope what the issue is. What's the issue look like? And so what's it look like here on the ground in Oregon? What a wonderful state in which to live. And let me just tell you that demographically, we are seventh in the nation on the per capita relationship of veterans to total population. And we are tied at exactly 15.1% with the state of Virginia. We have, according to the figures that we received from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, some 376,000 veterans in Oregon. That does not count, of course, the dependents that are receiving benefits, widows, certainly dependents of deceased veterans and others. Of that number, we have percentages which I'd like to share with you. We get asked this question a lot, so I think the committee would be interested in this, and I'm not going to bore you with a whole lot of statistics here this morning. But here's the breakdown of Oregon's veteran population by conflict or era, okay? The World War II veterans make up 22% of our veteran population in Oregon. The Korean veterans are 14% of our total population, veteran population. Vietnam veterans are 33.9, almost 34%. And the Gulf War is 9.4%. And, of course, we will be adding in the percentages of those people who are participating in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, Kuwait, and Iraq. I think you've all heard the numbers with regard to the Oregon Air and Army Guard that have been activated for service in the Middle East. And I very much appreciated the comments of the committee with regard to the nature of their service. Oregon's history with regard to the National Guard is an interesting one. We were first to fight in World War II with regard to National Guard mobilization. And once again, we have given disproportionate numbers, and I mean high numbers, in our current Guard mobilization in the Middle East. It's also interesting, one of the members mentioned the two of the 162. That will, history will show, will be one of the most storied battalions of the entire Oregon National Guard for many, many years to come, based on their very honorable and heroic service and sacrifice in downtown Baghdad. Probably one of the most dangerous assignments anywhere in the world today. They are preparing to rotate home, hopefully in March, and they should be welcomed home as the heroes that they are. Let me just say then that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs was formed even before World War II ended. The state legislature actually passed the legislation to create this department in 1944. The department took shape and began operations in 1945. And next month, we will be 60 years old. And we're looking pretty young for 60, I think, as an agency. We have a beautiful facility, thank goodness, over at 700 Summer Street, just north of here in the Capitol Mall area. I certainly hope the committee will have an opportunity to tour the building, those of you that haven't already seen it. We have a small office in Portland where we also service veterans, and then we have a representative in Bend. The last thing I guess I'd like to tell you, and I'd certainly be willing to answer questions, and I have a suspicion I may see this committee again before the end of session. So, let me just say that the system that services veterans in our country today, and as it is reflected here in our state, in Oregon, sort of looks like this. We have some 30 county veteran service officers scattered around through our 36 counties. Some of them have multiple counties. One of them has four counties. And this very efficient woman is sort of a circuit rider up the Columbia River Gorge, and she goes to these various counties and makes appointments and so on. But I would like you, in addition to them being veteran advocates, I'd like to have you see that as intake. That's where intake occurs. The veteran goes to see the county veteran service officer, or in Marion and Polk County, they come to our office and see our counselors, or they go to Portland and see what are known as national service officers. National service officers are those individuals who represent the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Disabled American Veterans, AMVETS, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and so on. Those are part of 13 congressionally recognized veterans organizations currently chartered here in Oregon, and representing a significant number of those veterans that I discussed with you who wish to affiliate themselves with a recognized veterans organization. In any event, when intake occurs at one of these points of contact, then the claim for compensation or disability is forwarded to the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, where there is a ratings process. The claim then is either accepted with a rating assigned, or it's denied, and of course they're allowed an appeal and that kind of thing. And so the rating and dispersal part of the system actually occurs at the federal level, the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. I want to describe for you our relationship before the regional director of Veterans Affairs ever talks to you, because you're going to meet a significant individual by the name of Jerry Larang. He is the claims and compensation side of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. We have a tremendous relationship with them. Very, very good. On the health side of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, the Roseburg Hospital, certainly the Portland Hospital, the operation down at White City and so on, which are all federal. The Portland operation is operated by Dr. Jim Tutschmidt. We have a great relationship with those folks. I will simply tell you that the relationships work because we want them to. And we talk and we meet and we listen to what the veterans are telling us that are going well and not so well. And an awful lot of the time it comes down to funding. And so we can get into a lot more detail about that later. As far as our own agency is concerned, in addition to providing claims and counseling intake work, we also provide conservatorship services to some 240 veteran families who need assistance in taking care of their day-to-day financials. This kind of service used to be called a guardianship. And our trust officers and trust officer assistants are, as far as I'm concerned, as good as it gets. They take care of these families, and I get letters and cards from the families all the time thanking us for the hard work that these people do. In addition to that, of course, we have the very well-known state Veterans Home Loan Program here in Oregon. Mm-hmm. There are only five states in the United States that offer such a program: Alaska, Oregon, California, Wisconsin, and Texas. We've offered that program, as I said before, since 1945, offering veterans below market interest home loans so that they can do one of the key things that all Americans want to do, and that's to have the dream of home ownership fulfilled. So that program is still ongoing. To scope that one for you, since 1945, we've made 333,000 home or farm loans. We've returned to the state economy some $7.4 billion. That's a success by any measure that anyone would want to make. However, the program is in great jeopardy because our funding source, which is the federal tax-free qualified veterans mortgage bonds, are no longer available as a result of action taken in the Congress in 1984. We and our other four states have been seeking legislation to remedy that situation ever since that time. Senators Wyden and Smith will reintroduce, I emphasize, a bill in the 109th session of the Congress to change the IRS tax code to allow us to use the qualified veterans mortgage bonds and to extend the eligibility date for veterans to receive them beyond December of 1976, which is where the date is today. You can see that that date is tied to December of 76 because it was focused on the Vietnam generation. It meant that you'd be eligible for that loan 30 years from discharge. And then after that, you're no longer eligible for a state loan. That's not the federal loan, it's a state loan. So we need to, in order to preserve our Oregon Veterans Home Loan Program, we need to take care of that qualified veterans mortgage bond situation or identify another fund source. Because it is very expensive, what we call the QVMB, those qualified veterans mortgage bonds, are the way to go as far as we're concerned. The entire impact on the federal government's budget, had it passed last session for 2004 through 2014, for the five states, the entire negative impact, because it was tax-free, was $240 million. It's not a lot of money. And the other side of that is we pay it back, you see, because every time we sell a house, you've got the building trades industry, you've got realtors, mortgage bankers, and everyone else involved. So you've got the trickle-down effect, and then they all pay taxes. The taxes then flow back to Washington, D.C., and so on. So we're going to make another run at it, and certainly we'll keep this committee informed as to our success. I will tell you that on the House side of the United States Congress, and certainly the Senate side, every single congressperson and senator from this state signed on to that legislation last time. All right. And I would expect that every one of them will do it this time. We need to take care of these people. So in closing, let me say, some things never change. When my grandfather came home from World War I, when my dad came back from World War II, and I promise you, when I came back from Vietnam, I was interested in a couple of key issues. I wanted to have an education, which the GI Bill gave me, thank goodness. I wanted to have a home, which the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs provided for myself and my family in Roseburg. And just to tell you how things have changed, my state GI loan was 3.4%. My monthly house payment was $69.96 a month. And so I can't seem to find that loan nowadays. But in any event, that allowed me to raise my children in a very nice home while I wasn't making very much money as a very young policeman. So that's what these kinds of programs have done for me. And, of course, I needed a job. So if we can take care of the home situation, if we can get these people employment, and if we can provide educational benefits, then we're giving a leg up to a population that will then become the good, continue to be the good citizens that they've already demonstrated that they are, and they will contribute to our community and to our state. So thank you very much, Chair Nelson and members of the committee, for allowing me to, I guess, express my opinion and a little bit about my organization.
Thank you so much, Director Willis. And we want to thank you for your service to our country.
And well, thank you.
And that service of your father and your grandfather. We're
thank you
most
very much.
Appreciative. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Oh, yes.
I would mention that Director Willis will be here in our informational briefing next Tuesday. So you can grill him for 3 hours if you like.
just 1 minute.
Yes, Representative Barnum.
Thank you. And Mr. Willis, thank you very much for your remarks. I appreciate them.
Yes, sir.
You indicated that the cost of the qualified veterans mortgage bonds was $200+ million. Was that over the entire 10-year period?
Yes, sir.
You're talking about not per year?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Madam Chair, I would like to, if you'd entertain me, just raise two points that I'd request that Jim bring back with him next week that I think are imperative for the committee to understand the true situation of Veterans Affairs, if you'd indulge me, Madam Chair. The first one is that the federal government is going to extend in the next 3 weeks the mobilization period to 3 years for reserve component soldiers, which may or may not mean that the 162 is coming back, but will surely mean that the 116th Armored Cavalry will be, for better word, for the record, severely bloodied in Iraq, which will increase the flow of veterans coming back. Tied to that, and true to the question, is next week if Jim would bring back to us, the federal government has effectively cut veterans federal funding 30%. And what is the impact going to be on our state veterans, and what plans would he recommend we implement to take care of at least the Oregon active and reserve soldiers coming back based on that 30% cut of federal funding? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Any other comments or questions for the director? Thank you very much.
You are welcome, Madam Chair, and I'll be
looking forward to hearing from you on Tuesday.
Well, I'll be happy to respond to that. That's a very challenging situation that we're facing. Before I leave, Madam Chair, please indulge me. I forgot to do something that I meant to do. I can't leave here without acknowledging the men and women of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. These professionals that do this work every day do so in a spirit that's at the bottom of my business card that I want to share with you. Because I like to introduce myself as Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, where every day is Veterans Day. That's how my people treat these folks when they come in, with great dignity and great respect, and I am so proud of them. And I hope you'll be able to see some of them as we go through. Right behind me is my Deputy Director, United States Army Veteran Paula Brown, and my Chief Financial Officer. This is the guy that makes sure that the bucks are all lining up correctly. This is Bruce Shriver. And so they're with me today, and I just like you to know who they are. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
I might mention that the Adjutant General will be here a week from today. So he will also have further information on probably some of those issues you were speaking to Representative Boquist. Okay. Next, I'd like to ask Sean Cruz from the office of our beloved Senator Gordley to come forward.
Yeah, Good morning, Chair Nelson, members of the committee. I'm Senator Gordley's legislative aide and very happy to be here today. I'm also the father of two Army National Guardsmen. My sons are from a Utah unit that was called up in November a year ago. I have a son who's a 50 caliber machine gunner on top of a Humvee that they had to armor themselves, and has served in Mosul, Tikrit, Balad, Anasiriya, Talil, and Skania, and is currently stationed at the Baghdad airport. So every day is bad news day. And my other son has received, suffered through receiving a medical discharge. And I'm want to convey the senator's gratitude for to the speaker for appointing this committee and mine as well. We look forward to working with you. Senator Gordley will be chairing the public safety sub of Joint Ways and Means in the military department there. We're going to have some bills to send your way. We want to see that our veterans, our troops, have everything that they deserve. And I also want to mentioned that I'm the son of a U.S. Army veteran. My dad enlisted in the Army in 1943. He was a citizen of Mexico. His family immigrated when he was very young, and served in went ashore in the third wave in D-Day, and received a commendation for his service under General George Patton in the Battle of the Bulge. So this is very close to my heart as well, and we have a bill draft that I've distributed. It's going to be Senate Bill 314, hasn't been printed yet, and we're calling this the Oregon National Guard Child Support Act. And the purpose of this bill will be, well, let me back up a little bit. Senator Gordley is aware that many Guard families suffer a loss in income when a breadwinner is deployed. We want to address that issue. We are also aware that the divorce rate among deployed soldiers is high, and that many of these soldiers are taking on child support obligations while serving in a combat zone. Senate Bill 314, the Oregon National Guard Child Support Act, will call on the people of the state of Oregon to meet the child support needs of these families during the times of their separation and service to our country in harm's way. So we'll want to talk about that further down the line. And lastly, I'd just like to convey again Senator Gordley's gratitude, mine as well. And Chair Nelson, she would also like to thank you for your work on mental health issues in the last session. Looks forward to more of that this session.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your being here, and we want your sons and your father to know we're grateful.
Thank you.
And are there any comments or questions of Sean?
I'll jump in. I would especially thank you for giving up a son. I've lost three of my own officers in three of the locations you've mentioned.
And
I have a son in the Marine Corps who's getting ready to go to Iraq. So thank you.
And I likewise want to express my appreciation of Senator Gordley. We seem to think alike on so many issues of concern, and I'm grateful to have her leadership. And I will mention at this time, we did ask to see if it were possible this could be a joint committee with the Senate, and we're informed there just aren't enough senators to fill all the committees that are already there, but we're grateful that we have the relationships with Senator Gordley to help us get our bills moved through the Senate. And if you'll express that to her, we appreciate it.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. And next, Tamara Brickman and Jim Booker of the Employment Department of the state.
Thank you. Chair Nelson, members of the committee. My name is Tamara Brickman, and I'm the legislative coordinator for the Oregon Employment Department. And what you're receiving right now are two pieces of paper that provide you with a little briefing on what the Employment Department does overall. We run the Unemployment Insurance Program for the state of Oregon, Business and Employment Services Program. We also house the Workforce and Economic Research Division of the in Oregon, which is receives a lot of funding from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We have the Child Care Division and the Office of Administrative Hearings in the Employment Department. And the primary purpose for coming today is I wanted to introduce you to Jim Booker, who is our State Veterans Program Coordinator, because the Employment Department has very specific programs dedicated to serving veterans in this state. And so I wanted to let Jim explain a little bit more about those programs.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. I'm glad I'm able to be here today. I am Jim Booker. I'm the State Veterans Program Coordinator for the Oregon Employment Department. I'm also an Air Force veteran myself. And I was asked to come and explain some of the things that we have available, the services and types of things that we can do for veterans at the Employment Department. First of all, I'd like to mention that we have people specifically trained to help veterans through a grant that comes from the U.S. Department of Labor. Those folks are called Local Veterans Employment Representatives and Disabled Veterans Outreach Program Specialists. The Local Veterans Employment Representative is their main job is to advocate for training and employment opportunities for veterans, as well as provide basic employment services to them. The Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Specialists are there to help the veteran who has more intensive needs, who have employment barriers that could include PTSD, other things. They're also there to connect with training needs for veterans who have those issues. They conduct outreaches to make sure that they can go out there and find those veterans, because we know it sometimes, like Representative Farr said, those veterans are not aware that they even have issues for a while, and then all of a sudden they come out, and that's when they need some help, and that's what we go out and help them to do that. All of the members of the Employment Department are made aware and trained to help veterans. So a veteran who is job ready doesn't have to wait and see a local veterans employment representative. We're able to help them right away with employment services. But if they need those special services, they'll direct them right to them. As the program coordinator, my job is to secure the grant from the Department of Labor, to monitor that grant and make sure that it's appropriately used, and then to also, of course, advocate for employment and training opportunities for veterans. So those are the types of positions that we have within the Employment Department that help veterans. Now, what kind of assistance do we give them? Well, one of the main things is, of course, vocational guidance, job search help. We have some awesome online systems that we have in place right now that are actually reaching over to Baghdad today. I've had emails from guys over in Iraq who said, hey, I'll be getting out soon. What can I do to find a job? And we've been able to connect them to these things. And I'm really glad that we've got computer systems today that work the way they do. Those online systems include our iMatch system. It's a job skills and matching system. It allows you to register yourself and put your job skills in and then match you to the jobs that are appropriate for what you're able to do. We also have a wonderful career guidance tool called qualityinfo.org, or the Oregon Labor Market Information System. And there you can go and say, I think I might want to be a welder. I can go and look what kind of skills are required to be a welder. What kind of educational requirements? Are there any licenses that I need? You can also look at industry trends. What's it like for welders today? What's the job market going to be like 10 years from now? What kind of prevailing wage can I expect? So that's a really excellent tool, and those are available to anyone anywhere in the world right now, 24/7. We also have access and promote national websites such as Helmets to Hard Hats for folks who are interested in getting into apprenticeship programs. There's a national push to help veterans who are looking to get into apprenticeship programs, and we're promoting that very strongly. One of the newest and I think best is the Hire a Vet campaign that comes from the President of the United States. They have a website called Hire Vets First. And on the back of that sheet that I gave you, I've listed these websites in case you'd like to visit them. Anyway, that particular one has a section for both businesses and for job seekers. For the business, I can go in and look at a skills translator that'll help me understand, well, what skills does an infantryman have that might help me in my business? And the same thing for the job applicant or job seeker. They can go in and say, I'm an infantryman. What good is that? What can I do with that? And it shows them how their skills translate into civilian jobs. It provides a way of connecting to one-stop centers in the state of Oregon. If I'm an employer looking to hire a veteran, where do I go? Who do I talk to? And these will connect them directly to local veterans employment representatives and disabled veterans outreach program specialists. We also help veterans find and connect to educational services that are available to them that they may not be aware of, like the Montgomery GI Bill, which is a educational service that's been provided through the military, where the service member contributes a certain amount of money, and then the military also matches that amount so that they can go to school after they return, or even while they're in. We help them connect to the Chapter 31 program, which is for service-connected disabled veterans. This is another, it's like a rehabilitation and education program. It provides a living stipend, as well as paying for your tuition and books. We have a work-study program that people who are involved in one of these educational opportunities can earn a minimum wage as they help other veterans get jobs. They actually work with us. We teach them some basic office skills and rely on them to help us match veterans to jobs. It works around their school schedule so they don't have to worry about doing that, as well as making sure that they only go up to 20 hours a week so we're not overloading them with work. Besides that, we help them learn about their services and benefits that are available to them through the ODVA, through also the U.S. Veterans Affairs Department. We help them connect with medical facilities that are around, help them with paperwork that can sometimes be overwhelming. We connect them with the various other veterans organizations that are out there, Disabled American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, because those organizations often offer things that we can't. We've had them offer rent help to veterans who were running out of money and needing some help with their rent, or for a family that's left behind while the veteran's overseas. We also, of course, work with many partners. I can't even tell you all the partners. I think it would take me forever to list all of them. But a good example, though, to help you understand what I mean by that, the Washington County Employer Council has helped us raise funds to be able to provide things like work boots for veterans who are need work boots as a requirement to get a job. That we even were able to use some of that money to put a veteran through flagger school so that they could get a job as a flagger. What do we do with all of this, with all these services? Let me give you a success story that I think will help you understand how well this works. One of the emphases that we have is, of course, helping veterans who are incarcerated transition back into society and become useful citizens. We had a veteran who had been incarcerated in Sheridan facility. We have a outreach program that reaches into that facility. We gave them some transition assistance, which was one of the things that we talked about, and that particular veteran was able to get a job very quickly as a mat cutter in a picture framing business. But what makes this even more fun is that within just a couple of weeks of starting, they recognized his potential and made him the supervisor of two stores. And even more exciting to me was he went back to a former cellmate of his, who was also a veteran, and got him a job as a mat cutter again. So you can see that these pieces reach out, touch people, and are actually very effective. And we have many success stories. I think that's about all I've got in terms of what we can do. I would like to invite, if any of you would like to come sometime to one of our offices and meet our local Veterans Employment Representative or Disabled Veterans Outreach Specialist, we'd be glad to do that. And if there are any questions, I'd be glad to help answer any of those.
Thank you very much, Tamara and Jim, for being here, and thank you for your service to our country. I just wonder, how do you make the veterans aware of your services?
Lots of different ways. One of them is outreach. We're out in veteran organizations. We're members of veteran organizations, and we're out there where veterans go, vet centers where veterans reach out for mental health issues. We go to various functions like chambers and things like that, make employers aware that we're out there and that veterans are a good choice to hire. We have marketing campaigns, just various ways of getting our names out there.
And if I could ask you, how many unemployed veterans do you think we have in the state at this time?
You know, I'm not aware of how many there are right at this moment. I could get that information for you if you like.
We would appreciate it, and perhaps you all could come back to our committee.
Sure.
And I just wondered, do you have a record of how many you've served since you started this program?
Oh, since we started? No, I'm not. I know that I think we have a rolling year count that we report to the federal government, and I would say that in our state, in the 50,000 to 60,000 range, and we could get specifics for you on a yearly basis.
Okay, I think we would appreciate
sure.
that information. And we seem to speak in terms of veterans, and it's my understanding, and I don't have a military background. I have a brother who was in the Navy and one who was in the Army, but everything else I've learned from individuals who have served. And so I'm not sure, what to you is the definition of a veteran?
For employment services through the Department of Labor grant that we have, a veteran would be someone who has served on active duty for more than 180 days or has received a service-connected disability, or if they have received a campaign or expeditionary medal. Most of the National Guardsmen that have been deployed meet those criteria in one form or another, and we are actively helping them through demobilization briefings and working with the Oregon Military Department to make sure that they're aware of the benefits that they have.
And so I would assume if an individual went to Iraq and did not complete 180 days, would you be able to help him?
The moment you step foot in Iraq, you become a veteran as far as we're concerned.
And with the federal government, would that be the rule?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And would that be any battleground?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, are there any other questions from the committee?
I
Representative Boquist.
Clarification, Madam Chairwoman. Under the federal statutes, if it is documented and they did the paperwork and you have the expeditionary medal, which means if some clerk, some spec four somewhere did the, I see Jim Willis shaking his head, actually made sure that medal is documented on your TD-214 or your release document, then you are in fact a veteran. So there are lots of cases where clerks have not actually done it, and I'm sure the Director of Veterans Affairs could address that at a later point, where we're going back and trying to fix those things. So that is a point of clarification, ma'am.
Great. I appreciate that comment, because this committee, as we planned our launch of our mission here, we said the first thing we need to do is to determine the definition of a veteran. And so we want to be sure that this encompasses all servicemen appropriately and properly, and we cure any ills in the system that eliminate those eligible, you know, from being a recipient of the benefits they deserve.
If I may comment, Madam Chair, we do look for that, because we're aware that, first of all, some veterans aren't aware at all of what their status might be. And, of course, we question, and we're willing to and able to look into the records to find out where they've been and all that. And in some cases, we help the government recognize that they didn't get something that they should have.
All right.
good for you.
Thank you.
Representative Bruin, did you have...
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, my hat's off to you for what I think is an excellent menu of programs. I'm particularly happy about the outreach program, but that's my question. I spent a lot of time in Portland, and all too often walking or driving through Portland, you'll see it's always a man on the side of the street somewhere with a little cardboard cutout thing that says veteran or disabled veteran. What's happening in that situation? Is it somebody in that situation? I don't want to over-stereotype. Is it somebody who you haven't been able to reach for whatever reason, or they're unreachable? I know that's a small minority of the overall veteran population, but it's also a worrisome one, especially in the metropolitan areas.
Madam Chair and Representative Bruin, we are aware of those issues with homeless veterans. We have a mandate by Department of Labor to specifically target them and find them. We're currently working with a group in Clackamas County that has received a special grant to market services to homeless veterans that involves things like signage on buses and TV marketing efforts and things like that. We work with homeless shelters, vet centers, etc. Are there homeless folks that get slipped through the cracks? Absolutely, but it's certainly not because we're not trying to find them and reach them. There was a point, I understand, when some people went so far as to go into bars to try to find them. Of course, I don't know if that happens anymore, but we care about our veterans, and we know where they are, and we do our best to find them. There are a very tiny minority of homeless folks that are difficult to reach because they don't want to be reached. And we do everything we can to encourage them to come in. We try to make things non-threatening. We don't force anybody into anything. We do try to let everyone that we possibly can know. We have things called stand-downs, which are gatherings that are kind of open-air things that where we pass out things like socks and maybe a food box and things like that draw homeless people in, and then we can make them aware of the services. So, yeah, we're definitely addressing that and doing everything we can to help find them and help them. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
I'd be interested in actually this other, maybe another question to add to Jim's to-do list for next week as well. I'm interested, through the work that you do as a department, are there needs that you have identified where, as you come into contact with veterans throughout Oregon, where you've said, gee, if only our state could meet that specific need, it would make all the difference in health care or education or employment. I assume over time you must have developed a list in the back of your mind. I'm wondering if you could either quantify that today or at some point in the near future for us, even if it's some very small kind of needs where you said, gee, that's a, you know, it falls in between the cracks of what the federal government does and the state does and private veterans groups do, but would make a critical difference in the lives of vets and their families. You may have some of those today, or you may want to get back to us about those.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Hunt, we're always looking for things like that. I think we've done a great job of, like I said, the many partnerships that we formed. We try to cover those, any kind of area that we might have found a chink in. I think, you know, healthcare, can you ever have enough? And as far as job help and that kind of thing, no, we've got a lot of that covered. We do have to work kind of hard. Like I say, finding work boots and things like that. Our grant doesn't cover paying for things like that, so we have to find innovative ways to do it. We have folks that have developed golf tournaments down in Southern Oregon to be able to help bring in funding to be able to do things like that. Bus passes would be a very big help, and we don't have money for that. There is an area right there where transportation for homeless veterans and others can be an issue, and we don't have funding for it. It's been difficult to get anything for free from anyone, so we have to find ways to get money. Other things I would have to think about and see if there's anything else, but you know, certainly I would love to find the answer to every single problem that might be there. And if we can identify things, though, that need issues, we try to find partners who can fill it. And they do come up as you go along. I mean, you meet somebody and, wow, there's something we never thought of before. But I don't have anything other than like bus passes and equipment issues and probably healthcare, which I think Director Willis could address much better than I could. It's a chronic issue that you need to be aware of. But if I can think of any others, I'd be more than happy. Or if there's anything that maybe you folks might be able to help us with, we would love to have that help. So thank you for asking a question.
Thank you. Any other questions or remarks? Well, thank you very much, Tamara and Jim, and we appreciate your support of our veterans and servicemen and women, and we hope you'll come back in our informational briefings over the next four meeting dates.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Is there anyone else here in the audience who would like to testify today?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald. I'm a retired U.S. Marine. Began a career in the service over 55 years ago as a member of the United States Coast Guard as an enlisted man quartermaster. After my time in the Coast Guard, I started college and joined Marine Reserves. Bad mistake, the Korean War came along. I shortly found myself in career as an infantryman and decided to stay in the service. Shortly after that, I was commissioned and spent 28 years in the service. And after retiring, I worked in education and retired as a principal of an alternative high school in Woodburn. I spent time in Korea, three tours in Vietnam, one with the French, 1954, and some time in Borneo with the British. I'm 100% disabled from the service, but I advocate for veterans. Have done it for the last three terms. And as bills come up or as veterans bring things to me that they want the state to help them with, I first go to the Department of Veterans Affairs, talk to Jim or other members up there, and then I bring them and testify before you for these particular bills. I know of six bills that will be coming before you this year, dealing from everything from increased educational aid to a military museum here in Salem. If you have any questions about veterans or a veteran comes to you and you have a question you don't have an answer, please contact me. If I can do anything to help you, please ask. Thank you.
Mr. McDonald, we're so appreciative of you. And I know you've been here as long as I've been here, and I just appreciate all your input, and also the memorabilia that I frequently see displayed that you seem to be responsible for in some way.
Yeah, we'll have a display here in the state capitol month of May every year, and at the state fair. The state fair this year will be Vietnam.
Let me ask our committee members if they have any questions. Vice Chair Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How will we get in touch with you, Matt? Do you have cards, or can we get contact information?
Debbie, Representative, I have a card, and each member, other member here, has a member of the card because I have an invitation for you to be at the Veterans Muster on the 9th of February, and my card will be inside that invitation. And I walk the halls here. So if you see me, just grab a hold of me.
Okay. Are there any other comments or questions? I do want to mention that Representative Comp said, I think that name sounds familiar, and I'd like her to tell the committee why.
Well, it's been my pleasure to be part of the Woodburn School District for a number of years and also one of the administrators that began an alternative school in Woodburn in 1994. or 96, somewhere around there. Anyway, and Mac McDonald was the first teacher administrator that we hired to start our alternative program that now supports over 100 and some students every year to help get their credits for high school, and Mac was a key person to build that foundation. So thank you.
It's a small world. When I was representing Papa about Mr. McDonald, she said, goodness, that name sounds familiar. Was he ever in education? I said, as a matter of fact, he was. So I appreciate your service to our kids, too, in education. And thank you very much. I'd like to just meet, is there anyone else who would like to testify today? I would just like to mention about three things to our committee, if I could, and to our audience. There has been a custom in our House committees, and this was started, I believe, by now Senator Jackie Winters, that individuals who use acronyms get penalized. And so I've been listening today and writing down the acronyms. You know, GI. I mean, Representative Boquist, I hope you've got a good banker, because I figure you're the first one who's going to be contributing. And then I heard the ODVA and the VA, and I heard from Mr. Booker several. Where'd he go? Several of those. And so anyway, if it's okay with the committee, I thought it would be wise if we go along with this same protocol, because those of us who aren't military, frankly, don't know. And I hate to tell you at this moment, I cannot think what GI stands for.
Government issue.
Government issue bill is what we're going to say instead of the GI bill. Have y'all got that? So it doesn't you didn't come up, and I have to ask for a contribution. Anyway, we will put a contribution cup back by the door, and everybody will be on their honor. So if they testify, we'll remind them that this may have occurred during their testimony, and on their own merit, we'll trust them to make a contribution, and we'll use that for a veterans fund. Would that be acceptable to everyone? Okay, it'll probably be the largest fund of any committee I can imagine. And whoever said AMVETS seemed to be our first speaker, I recall. I think that was Director Willis that said AMVETS, if I wrote that down. So, you know, today, no charge. Okay. Also, while we have the financial expert here from the Department of Veteran Affairs, I want to be sure you know we're greatly concerned about the governor cutting the budget for this department. And I have spoken to the governor about this, and we look forward to your bringing that information to us next week as to where those funds have been moved. As the governor expressed to me, he didn't really cut the budget, he just moved them around. So for those, especially the new people, well, even us old people who still seem to have difficulty in finding numbers in the budget, we hope you'll clarify that for us. Thank you. And last, if there are no other issues, I'd like to bring to the attention of this committee a very important bill that I hope you'll agree with me we want to sponsor as a committee. In our last legislature, we passed a bill awarding a high school diploma to those veterans of all wars other than Vietnam. And we were greatly remiss and not including our Vietnam veterans, when we consider over, you know, 30 years has almost gone by or has gone by. And I would just like to ask concurrence that you would concur that we would want to sponsor that bill and award those Vietnam veterans who were dispatched to Vietnam not able to complete their high school education, that we would ask to be conferred upon them their high school diploma. Would that, can I get your concurrence?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If we're going to be introducing a committee bill, you'll want to do it formally, and we'll put it on the agenda and give the 48 hours notice. What we can do is go ahead and have the concept drafted by legislative council and come back another time. We will post it, and then the committee can consider it formally at that time.
Hey, are there any points you would like to mention on this issue at this time? Okay, thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Well, my recollection, if I may, was that that bill last time established some kind of an honorary diploma, if I remember right. If we left out Vietnam, we shouldn't have. I would agree.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Representative Bolton.
Since I didn't have the distinct pleasure of accepting spit upon because of the Vietnam War, why are we excluding conflicts that we have legally declared war or had conflicts since that time, like the first Iraqi war and the present Iraqi war, in which we are mandate, or we're actually now recruiting people without high school diplomas because we're so short of personnel, and they're going over and serving in harm's way, and many of them not coming back. So I think we might want to look at the whole package and say maybe we missed a few other people that should have been and deserve the merit of this attention, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Can I address this bill?
Excuse me. Yes, you could, Mr. McDonald. However, the only reason that I brought this up today, we're not really deliberating over it. I just wanted to get the committee into a feeling of how we can go about bringing a committee bill. And I just wanted to use that one for an example. And I know you have supported the other bill. And we will draft the appropriate bill, and we'll certainly ask for your support and advice.
The only thing I was going to say, the reason...
Would you come... I'll have to ask you to come up to the microphone, if you will, and identify yourself, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the last bill was...
Please.
The... last bill, my name is Mac McDonald, representing VFW-DAV, American Officers Association, and the Military Order of World Wars. The last bill was drafted, and it left out the Vietnam veterans because some people might use the high school diploma to try and get employment. And Senator Walker and I discussed it. And the reason Vietnam veterans were left off is because most of them were in their 40s, or late 40s at that time. Right now, most of them are in their 50s. And that's why I asked Senator Walker and yourself, and we discussed, including the Vietnam veterans, the reason we didn't include the Iraqi Desert Storm or the Iraqi War at this present time or Afghanistan is because they're still young and may use that a high school diploma, saying I have a high school diploma to get employment. So we did not include them for that reason.
Thank you for that input. And we'll certainly discuss this further, and we'll have time for full deliberation of this issue, and you can have the opportunity to get input from constituents and associates. Therefore, being no further business today, to come before the committee, we are adjourned.
Essentially,